If you were listening to our program last week, you may have heard me discussing with musician and writer John Collins the subject of African pop roots and developments on the African, especially West African, popular music scene. Now, he has published a book on the subject and is still doing original research on it. Well, last week, he talked about what he calls fusion music, from traditional songs and rhythms from Ghana and Nigeria to the Congo jazz from Zaire and the Congo Republic. Today, we'll conclude our chat by looking at other musically important areas of Africa. When we talk about African popular music, we very rarely hear about East African influence. Why is this so?
Well, I'm not quite sure of the reason, but I can give you some few facts. One is that something very equivalent to high life did emerge in East Africa around about the First World War, called Mbeni music, which was it came out of the German and the British brass bands, African brass bands connected with the First World War. And when this music spread into the bush from the cities, it sort of lost its brass band instruments, and was the instruments were replaced by sort of African drums, kazoos, whistles. For instance, the Kalila dance, which is a dance I think in the Copper Belt area, is a remnant of this brass band music, but everybody's forgotten. They think it's a traditional dance, but it actually comes out of brass band music. But in fact, generally, the Mbeni music, the brass band music, died out, whereas in West Africa, it was transformed into highlife in the 1920s. Then there's a sort of a gap in East Africa as far as fusion music goes. Of course, the traditional music and the mbira, the hand piano music, has always been there. But then what happened was that around about the 1950s and 60s, Zairean music began to become popular, coming from Central Africa, and particularly with the civil war in the Congo, a lot of the musicians left Zaire and Congo-Brazzaville and emigrated to East Africa, and they took that Zairean style to East Africa, where it was adapted into a sort of Swahili language. At the same time, from South Africa, there was a sort of music coming up from South Africa, like Kwela music. So what happened in East Africa is you've got this sort of fusion of Zairean music, Kwela music, plus their own indigenous Mbira music. And all this didn't come together until really the 1970s.
What was happening in the Muslim-dominated areas of West Africa, for instance, because we have countries like Niger, like Mali, and like Senegal and Guinea. What contribution have these areas made to African popular music?
Well, again, because they belong to the French colonies or the French colonial empire, the development of fusion music there was much later, as in Zaire. In fact, that music is dominated traditionally by griot music, which is the sort of the traditional historians who travel from chief to chief playing traditional instruments. But for instance, Iti Mensah, the Ghanaian dance band leader, was in Guinea just after they gained independence from, I think they said no to De Gaulle in a referendum, and the French left. But in spite of the French having left the country, Iti didn't meet any equivalent to highlife musicians playing their own local melodies on. He just met French trios playing sort of waltzes and foxtrots.
Well, the situation has changed tremendously since then.
Yeah, what's happened in the French-speaking countries is that they gained independence later than the English-speaking countries, and their fusion music was sort of behind the English-speaking countries. But now there's been this tremendous sort of catching up and overtaking, partly due to the fact that the French-speaking countries are still tied to Paris more closely than the English-speaking countries are tied to Britain. So what's happened is that the music from the French-speaking countries, such as Niger, Zaire, Abidjan and all that, have been recorded in Paris. And you've got very, very high quality recordings. And this is, again, I think explains why the European ear picks up the Zairean sounds or the French-speaking music more easily than the music of the English-speaking countries. Because in the English-speaking countries, they tried to set up record industries. Like in Ghana, they set up recording studios from the 1940s, in Nigeria from the 1960s. And maybe the recording quality wasn't quite up to the standard as what was happening in France. So you've got this strange position where, because the French-speaking, ex-French-speaking colonies are more tied to the metropolis, that's Paris, even today, you've got a higher, more sophisticated music coming out of these countries. Yeah.
You've talked a lot about the roots. How about the trunk and the branches? Where do we go from here?
Well, it's such a vast subject, but if you one thing that's happening in Nigeria and Ghana is that because of the problems economically in these countries, you've got a lot of the high life is shifting into the churches. And you've got this, whereas 10 years ago, most of the African churches, the African Christian churches, were just using drumming and dancing, much to the annoyance of the more orthodox Christians. They've now adapted the guitar bands and the highlife music and juju music and so on. So you're getting a development of gospel highlife, very similar in many ways to what happened in America in the 1930s. If you remember, rural blues went into the cities in the 20s, became urban blues, and became very popular. And then with the Depression, a lot of the blues musicians in the cities had to move into the churches, and you got the development of gospel music in the 30s. And after the war, this emerged as soul music. People like Aretha Franklin and James Brown, they were all trained in the churches. Now, I think something similar is happening in West Africa. Because of the hardship of the musicians are facing economically, commercially, they're moving into the churches, and the churches are sort of acting as a sort of a patronage for guitar band music in West Africa, particularly in Ghana, in fact. One of the interesting results of this move into the church, some people might say it's rather reactionary, but in fact it's very liberating, particularly as far as women are concerned, because whereas fathers and mothers never allowed their daughters to join the commercial type of guitar band, they will allow their daughters to sing in the church bands. And so now what you're getting in the highlife groups is, instead of the men singing like women, as they did in the old days, you're getting women singing the parts themselves. So I'm looking actually now in Ghana for the emergence of a new Aretha Franklin, a Ghanaian Aretha Franklin.
The copyright problem and the fact that musicians don't receive just a reward for their activities is cited as one of the reasons why African musicians do not eventually make it so big. What do you think accounts for the fact that Africa, since Makeba and probably Hugh Masekela, why Africa hasn't produced a Bob Marley, a big superstar?
That's a big question. I think it's too early to say that there is going to be no African Bob Marley. But I think one of the problems is that until there's an African recording industry, if the expectation is just somehow Africa is unimportant except as a musical source, and then all the things are going to happen in Europe and America, the money's going to be made, I think this is the wrong way of looking at it. I think the thing has to be centered in Africa. Africa has to have a recording industry. It's got the biggest market for African music. And what happens in the West is a little bit peripheral. This is how I think it should be. Maybe one day it will be like that. But to put one's hope that, you know, the exodus of African musicians abroad will create the Bob Marley of Africa as a sort of an exile, I'm not sure if this is so. I think it will come from within Africa as the African music industry sort of develops and grows.
John Collins, Ghana-based British musician and writer on the development of African popular music, the subject of his recent book entitled African Pop Roots. And that brings down the curtain on our program Afrocene for this week. It's been a pleasure for me sharing your company. I'll be around at the same time next week, so why not join me again then? For the moment, it's cheerio for me, John Hammond, in Hilversum, Holland.
Get on the beat, the dancing time. Get on the beat, my lifetime.